And I hope you are hungry because we are talking food today. Specifically, though, we are talking local food today. And I have three movers and shakers in the food world here to tell us about what is new in the local food scene. My name is Jenny Nyman. I'm going to be hosting this hour. And in the studio is Eliza Eller, who's one of the founding members of Ionia and one of the founding members of Kenai Local Food Connection. Thanks for being here, Eliza.
Thank you for inviting me.
We also have Heidi Che, who is the district manager for Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District. Hello, Heidi.
Good morning.
And we've got Abby Alla, who is the owner of Ridgeway Farms and probably one of our longest homesteading family farmers in the area. So thanks for being here, Abby.
Thank you.
So two questions. Introduce yourselves a little better than that as far as your connections to local food. And then if you could tell me a little bit about your thoughts on why local food is important. We hear all kinds of things about health and food insecurity and all of these reasons why growing and eating locally is a good thing. So I'm just kind of curious at where you come from on that. So Eliza, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, about 32 years ago, I moved to the Kenai Peninsula with a group of families who had not been thriving well in the Lower 48, and we created a little eco village and support group for ourselves and our kids to grow up in. And actually, we met Abby the first year that we arrived back in 1986 because we hired her to clear our first garden. And she came out with her tractor and pulled the trees and created our about a little less than half an acre garden, which has since produced thousands of pounds of produce for us. And Ionia is all about the food. We are based in natural plant foods. That's what we have in common as families. And we have found that eating that way, eating whole natural plant-based foods, has really worked for us. It's really created a strong, healthy base for our kids to grow up into and for us to survive and thrive. And about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, I started to get involved with other people in the community who felt that way. Heidi Che and Tammy Marsters, who is a public health nurse, and other people in the community who really felt passionately about food and good healthy food. And we started to come together and eventually called ourselves the Kenai Local Food Connection. And we create promotional events and anything we can think of to really support and promote the local farmers and growers and food producers in our area.
Before the show got started, we were chatting a little bit and you said something that I think kind of goes against a stereotype maybe some people have. So this winter, you guys are getting a lot of veggies from a grower in Palmer. So you're still able to eat Alaska grown year round. And what did you tell me about parsnips?
So we're getting root vegetables from a farmer in Palmer, and he has the most amazing volcanic soil that produces sweet, sweet carrots and parsnips. And everybody hates parsnips. I also have always hated parsnips. They're just something about them is kind of bitter and blah. But these are amazing. They're like honey. I'm not lying. And he has beets and carrots and parsnips and I want to say rutabagas and daikon, which is a long, sweet radish, all available now and just crisp and delicious. And feeding us every day. And also I wanted to say that there's also some hydroponic greens being grown here in the community in the wintertime now. And we also have sea vegetables and berries that have been preserved and fermented vegetables that have been preserved from the summer. So you can eat quite a bit local year-round.
And you can eat deliciously as well. I think people think,
part.
You know, oh, maybe I'm not a big fan of vegetables. And so I grew up in Southeast Alaska, one of those islands that currently you can't get in or out of without ferry service. But when I was a kid, all of our food came up on a barge and it was not a real regular schedule. So we didn't get much of anything fresh and we never traveled. So I did not believe that I really liked any fruits or vegetables because I didn't have fresh. We ate either canned or iceberg lettuce. I was not aware there was any kind of lettuce beyond iceberg lettuce until I went to college. But then when I got out in the world and went to farmers markets and had fresh produce, I realized, like, wow, this stuff is really good.
It's completely different.
Who knew?
Yeah.
All right, Heidi, how about you?
Well, my local food story goes back to when I was 20 years ago, was when I was raising young children, and my best friend said, hey, we're going to get our kids involved in 4-H. And of course, she had grown up in 4-H. And Abby Alla here is her mom. And Abby grew up in 4-H herself and raised a whole slew of kids through 4-H. And so we got into becoming, I became a swine herd, the mother of swine herds. Excuse me.
That should be on a t-shirt.
Right. Something I never, never expected. And Abby here just has helped raise a whole lot of children to be connected to life, what grows from the ground, animals that we harvest for food, and had a huge impact on my children. A decade later, I was looking for a new line of work and a way to contribute to the sustainability of the community. Part of why I'm involved in local food is because I look at this long-term trend, and we've created a very complex national and global food system. And as we did that, that's great. We can breed things from all over the planet. But in many farming areas of the country, people cannot feed themselves because they've stopped growing locally, what grows locally. And so I promote local food through Kenai Local Food Connection and Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District and my personal purchases in order to create the community that I would like to live in, that I will be able to live in the future. So I want to make sure that we can increase our food security here to the maximum extent that we can. And also, you know, over the last long period of time, as Americans have grown this complex food system, our food has become cheaper and cheaper. It's become more and more processed, but our healthcare costs have skyrocketed. And so we know there's a direct relationship between eating more whole foods, fresh foods, locally grown foods, and our health. So two biggies for me.
So food insecurity, I think we all are aware. Obviously, we live on a peninsula and the highway is the only way in and out. That's where all of our food comes as well. And we can all think of instances where that road has been closed down for one reason or another, or can imagine reasons where that road would be closed down. We live in an active earthquake zone, an active volcanic zone, avalanches and whatnot. So
not to mention wildfires.
Not to mention wildfires. Exactly. This summer, I think people going to the grocery stores when that highway was closed down started to notice not as many things on the shelf.
As we have a just-in-time food system. So what applies here to the peninsula applies to the whole state. We've seen where you have a problem with one barge coming up from Seattle and trying to land in Anchorage and not being able to land, and grocery store shelves start emptying very quickly. So,
and then there's the economic component to this as well, mm-hmm. as far as dollars grown locally and staying local if they're spent local too. Abby, I would ask you how you got into local food, but you were pretty much born into local food, correct?
Right. My folks were one of the first six homesteaders that came to this area, and my dad wanted to farm for a living. And we've done a lot of different kinds of farming. At one time, he had 16 cows, but he didn't have any fields or anything, so they just wandered around, and he would find them and milk them and and bring the milk around Kenai in a big 5-gallon can, and my mother would pour it into other people's containers. And that didn't go over really, really that good. And then they did vegetables, because I have pictures of them doing vegetables. And one of my early memories, I mean, I was fairly old, but one of my early memories of them doing vegetables is I was walking around the field, and I decided I wanted to eat some broccoli. Now, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? I want to take a little piece of broccoli and eat it. And I did, and my mom saw that, and she just had a fit. She rushed me to the house and made me vomit because they had just sprayed the broccoli.
Oh.
And I swore I would never have a garden that anybody couldn't walk through and take a little piece of broccoli or a little piece of lettuce and eat it and not have to go into the house and throw up because you just ate pesticides, herbicides, or fungicides. And then they went into potatoes for years. They had 70-plus acres of potatoes and a huge root cellar. And then in 1963, the government quit buying, for the military, quit buying any locally grown products. In the 50s, we produced 50% of what Alaska was eating. Now we produce 2% of what Alaska eats. And so so that made it so he had to stop because he had no way to sell all these potatoes. Even if he was bringing them to Anchorage, he didn't have a way to sell them all. And when you're talking about somebody who did a lot of farming a long time ago, you can't have that subject without having Marge Mullins' name in there.
Right, absolutely.
Her husband had polio, and so he was stuck to a wheelchair or his tractor. It was a little. It was a big tractor, but a little tractor. And my good times were when I would walk the 2.5 miles down to their house and be able to help them, you know, weed or whatever, and then get to go swimming with them. But Marge Mullins did most of it. And she's told me stories about sitting in a little tiny cold root cellar trying to get the roots off of carrots so she could sell them to make some money. And they had a whole chicken house, a huge, huge chicken house. And the only way she could sell her eggs was to be able to, she knew Mr. Carr of the Carr.
Oh, Carr Gottstein, which yes, became yes, Carr's yes. Grocery Stores. Yep.
Yes, she knew him, and so he would ship her eggs, or she would ship them to Anchorage, because there wasn't enough people locally to sell all her eggs to.
Homesteaders had their own gardens and their own chicken, for the most part. I mean, not everybody, certainly, but it seemed like it was much more common that people did
right.
provide for themselves.
Right.
So you're talking about losing the army contracts or not
right.
buying locally anymore. What else changed over the years that people got away from having their own subsistence garden or chickens or cow or whatever the case may be? Because it's coming back now, but man, for decades in between, that just did not seem to be a thing that people around here did anymore.
Well, I don't know. You know, I can't answer that because I can't answer why people did stuff. But there has been several inflection, you know, with people coming into the area. And it was the military that came in and, you know, they didn't want to grow anything. And then there was the oil. In 1958, the oil came to Alaska.
Right. So if you get transient populations,
right.
what's the point of planting a garden if you're just going to move in a couple years kind of thing?
Well, they didn't want to plant. They came from the idea that you couldn't grow up here because where I grew from was a lot easier.
Mm.
And it's not that it was easier. It's just that some things are different. And, you know, typically in the ag organizations, we get people sent up from the states to be the head of this organization or that organization. And they see everything out of the eyes of somebody who came from a different area. And that could be a little hard, too, in my opinion.
Heidi and Eliza, too, mm-hmm. you both have been around and involved in this subject for quite some time. What do you see as some of the changes in interest in farming and maybe some of the, Heidi, especially some of the programs that have come about that have maybe made it a little easier, like high tunnels, for instance, in people being able to do these sorts of things?
Right. Well, that's an opportunity for me to share some of the exciting numbers that came out of the Ag Census earlier this year, earlier in 2019. So certainly the high tunnels had a lot to do with how much growth we've had here on the peninsula. Abby, how many high tunnels do you use now?
Well, we have 14 greenhouses. They're not all high tunnels. I think only 8, 9, 10 of them are high tunnels.
Only 10.
And each one of them quite large. So for those who are not familiar, when we make a distinction between the greenhouse and high tunnel, a high tunnel structure is a plastic over metal structure generally that's where where you're planting in the ground. So you use that as a form of season extension to get the ground warmed earlier in the spring and be able to continue harvesting your crop later in the fall. So it was around 2010 that the high tunnel boom took off here on the Kenai Peninsula. And that got started because the Natural Resources Conservation Service, part of USDA, introduced that practice and a cost share program. And Homer in particular was thinking a lot about how do we become a more sustainable community, and there were quite a few people who were really primed to take advantage of that program. And Homer became really the high tunnel capital of the country, highest per capita concentration of high tunnels there. And then here on the Central Peninsula, the program has also been very popular and has allowed people who were backyard gardeners to scale up and become small market gardeners, and in some cases quite large. And it's also the cost share program for high tunnels in particular has been on the wane as Natural Resources Conservation Service kind of refocuses on a whole range of practices that take care of our natural resources. So nutrient management, irrigation, water management, cover cropping, soil health building, other practices. So the high tunnels were a big thing for a while. They're really not the main thing now that Natural Resources Conservation Service is offering. So we may have peaked out on the number of cost-shared high tunnels here on the peninsula, but people are still building them on their own.
Okay.
But just as an indicator of how much growth there has been with respect to local food, we have the Census of Agriculture. It is the most complete comprehensive data set we have. It comes out every 5 years, carried out by USDA. And in the 10-year period from 2007 to 2017, on the peninsula, we tripled the amount of food grown and sold direct to consumers from something around $300,000 to $1 million. And on top of that, then there's quite a bit of other agricultural product if you start looking at flowers and hay and forage and medicinal plants and nursery stock and that sort of thing. But if we're just looking at the local food part, that we've been on a very steep growth curve.
And I see this as part of a nationwide and even a worldwide trend. It's, you know, in the last, I guess during World War II, there were Victory Gardens and there was kind of a resurgence of people really digging in to take care of ourselves as a nation. And in the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years, 10 or 15 years, it's been kind of a perfect storm of economic hardship for a majority of our citizens, combined with health decline, as seen in rising rates of obesity and diabetes, even in our youth, and concern about environmental disasters. And I feel like all of those three factors are coming into the public consciousness and making people worried and concerned. And like World War II, they're starting to dig into how can we really overcome these difficult times. And growing food and or supporting people who are willing to grow food locally that you know and that you can reach out and support through a variety of ways is one of the kind of the main actions that people can take that that can feel incredibly relaxing to all of those major crises that are looming. And there's something primal about housing and food than when people feel more secure at a deep level on those issues, they just become more resilient, and our communities become more resilient. And everybody knows this on some level. And so I think there's an urge to get back to that deep resilience where everybody in the community knows everybody because we're feeding ourselves and everybody eats. So that's a relevant issue to everybody. And everybody has health, and everybody has to support themselves economically. And I feel like those three factors just have kind of come together nationwide, worldwide, perhaps, in maybe not everywhere, but a lot of nations, and certainly here in Alaska.
the movement toward curing existential hangry on a community level is nice to see. And that's the other component of it. So there's becoming a grower yourself, and then there's for other folks who maybe don't have the knowledge, don't have the time, don't have the space, don't have the means, whatever the reason is, but to have access to locally grown food. There are so many more ways and so many more convenient ways that you can buy local produce. Abby, you've got a couple different options, right? You do the CSA program still?
Yes, a CSA is community supported agriculture, and it's where the grower produces the food and we have it all, you know, all harvested and sitting there, and then they go around this, you know, area, this building, and pick out what they're going to pick that week. And it's better than me picking their box, because they might want lettuce one and I might have picked lettuce two, but it doesn't matter to me which lettuce they pick.
Right.
You know, but we have been having about 50 people.
50 households.
50 families. And we produce for a family of four. And we need to upgrade. We need to have at least 70 families in order to meet all our obligations and to be able to hire people.
So it's a monthly or weekly subscription fee that people pay, and then they come out and they get to pick. Some of the other CSA services, you just pick up a box somewhere, and sometimes right. You can have some say into, well, I really don't like radishes, but I really love tomatoes, or whatever the case may be. But in your case, since you are so centrally located, Ridgeway Farm is just mm-hmm. right off Strawberry Road, people can come out and actually hand pick.
No, they don't hand pick.
Oh, they don't hand pick.
We have picked it all and set it on tables.
Oh, so I don't mean, yeah, in the, yeah. I don't mean in the fields.
Hand yeah, picking. Yeah. They can pick what, you know, what broccoli they want mm-hmm. or that kind of stuff.
And then go
and
home with their.
And there's signs, you know, you get four different types of lettuces and, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
As a CSA customer with young children a while ago, I would say CSAs are great if you really want to make sure that you're getting a lot of fresh produce for the summer. Know exactly where your food comes from, because you can go meet the farming family and see those fields. And then you go home with this creative challenge. I've got this huge, lovely basket of a variety of things, some that are new and different, and how am I going to use them all? So mm-hmm. My kids and I loved inventing what we were going to do with all of the things that were in Abby's basket, and then freezing what we couldn't eat or sharing it with a neighbor, and it was always very abundant and fun. And another thing that the CSA at Ridgeway Farms does is somebody is continually posting recipes on the yeah. Facebook page about what to do with this week's unusual and
oh,
delicious fresh
that's
produce.
That's helpful. Okay, so CSAs, and then, of course, the farmers markets. Oh, the growth in the farmers markets.
There's been a lot of growth in the farmers markets. And in particular, if the shining highlight of this last year really has been the growth of the Soldotna Saturday market. And if people haven't been there in a while, you know, if markets go through ebbs and flows. This market is now celebrating its 25th year this summer, and they are having a Woo-hoo. Big art contest. If there are any artists out there listening, submit your artwork by March 1st for their t-shirts and special 25th anniversary swag. And this year they practically doubled. They more or less doubled the number of vendors that they were in during the height of the season. They were getting 26 and 27 vendors and 500-600 customers a day. A lot of traffic through there. You could stop by and get hot coffee and a fresh soup and bread and do your grocery shopping. And
it's a real festive atmosphere. You know, it's something fun to do.
It's gotten quite lively.
Yeah. There's just, you know, you see people you know, or you just see people running around and buying things and having treats. And it's just fun.
So that's the Soldotna Saturday Market that's right adjacent to Soldotna Elementary School from May through September. And they extended their season this year another 4 weeks to the end of May. Meanwhile, there are the markets at the Tuesday Market at the Food Bank that will be continuing again this year. And that's kind of on the upswing. And what they've been doing at the Food Bank is having talks. They will have guests from the community come in and prepare a meal. Eliza, you did one of those, right?
Chef at the market. kind of thing?
What was the indoor?
Oh, the indoor, food, yes. Talks, food, yes. Food basically, kind of cooking classes.
Cooking classes kind of during the market. So that was an interesting innovation that they were doing.
And I think they've also had, they have a high tunnel out there as well, and they've had programs for kids to come out and kind of learn a little bit about gardening and go that home with their own plant start as well.
So they grow beautiful vegetables there.
Yeah, there's often a kid-friendly component to that.
The Soil and Water Conservation is the one who donated that high tunnel to them.
Oh, well, they make a lot of use out of that thing. They produce a lot out of that tunnel.
The money came from Natural Resources Conservation mm-hmm. Service. The Soil and Water Conservation District kind of brought all the pieces of the puzzle together and
Heidi,
has
is that market still the only food market?
That food Tuesday only market at the food bank remains a food only market.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of nice if you don't want to wade through a whole lot of crafts, if you're just there for the food. It's great to go to that market and, you know, find your favorite farmers and look and see what the other ones are bringing that day and get tempted a little bit and just, you know, stock up.
I think the Soldotna Saturday Market isn't necessarily just edible food, but they have a Alaska made.
Oh, there's a
requirement,
large component.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So any crafts or food products that you find at the Soldotna Saturday Market will be made in Alaska.
And then if you do like to do additional shopping while also looking at food products, the Kenai Saturday Market and the Wednesday Market, you find a whole range of stuff that you can
look
through.
Whole range of stuff. And the Wednesday Market, of course, has been drawing huge, huge crowds. And for those who love the Wednesday Market and the entertainment that's always there, and you like local food, you really need to be reliable for the handful of farmers that they're trying to grow there at the Wednesday market. And what's a little bit discouraging for farmers who go to the Wednesday market is, are people there actually to buy food, or are they just wanting to wander and have lunch and dinner and crafts?
Okay.
But if you want them there, if you want to do your one-stop shopping, be a regular, reliable customer, and the farmers will be there as well.
Okay. So that's in-person farmers markets. There's also the food hub,
the
correct?
Online yes. farmers market.
So how does that one work?
The Alaska Food Hub started 5 years ago. It is an online farmers market, so with four delivery locations in Soldotna, Nanilchik, Homer, and Seldovia. And the way this works is that farms, often the same ones that you will find at the farmers markets, set up their online store. You can see all about their farms and what products they're offering. And the shopper can get on once a week during the shopping period, Friday to Monday, see everything that's available for sale, click, 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 like you would order at Amazon, place your order, and then on the pickup day on Wednesday, you go and pick up your order, and you will have exactly the items that you choose. And your credit card somebody will run your credit card after it's been confirmed that you have picked up everything that you ordered. It's kind of seamless.
Yeah, so super convenient as well. And then the other big thing as far as farmers markets go is the Uber season ending market, right? The Harvest Moon Local Food Fest,
mm-hmm.
which has not been around in the big festival format for all that long, but man, has that thing grown.
It is the best festival of the year.
We
and
call it.
We call it so fun.
The biggest farmers market of the year.
There were thousands of people, but it had a very relaxed, friendly, family-friendly atmosphere. The center of the festival is our children's tent, in which there's many, many different activities for kids to do, all food-related, of course. And at last year, there were dozens of kids. And there's a space for parents to sit and relax on chairs so they can kind of watch the kids and enjoy the music. We've had great musicians. We have amazing food that you can eat. There was a pie contest. So we had, I don't know how many entries, maybe 25 or 30 entries of amazing pies. And some of the winners were 12 and 13-year-olds. They had their own category, so there was, just crazy pies, like, made with local ingredients, but just
Very creative.
Very creative and gourmet. There was even a dill pickle pie, which I have to admit I didn't try. But so some people said it was
amazing.
I
need to jump in on the pickle pie because KDLL just had our pickle fest last Friday because we are Pickle Hill Public Radio and we had a pickle cooking contest where bring a dish that involves pickles. And the pickle pie comes from the folks at the food bank and they brought it to Pickle Fest as well. And it also won the judge's award.
Oh my lord. Well, I guess I'm going to have to try this
next
year.
Did you taste that yourself?
It was really good.
Really?
I would not have thought. No. No, it has milk. It has whipped cream in it. It is a sweet pie with pickles. It was pretty good.
Sliced, diced. I'm really curious.
Yeah, they weren't like large chunks of pickles, but yeah, there's definitely pickle flavor in there.
Okay, then.
That pie contest, we have to give some hats off to the Alaska Farm Bureau local Kenai Peninsula chapter. And 4-H, who put on the pie contest in collaboration with Kenai Local Food Connection for the festival.
Yeah, they were a great partner this year. And we have a fermentation station. You can come and get your fresh produce that you just bought pickled and show how to pickle it. And what else do we have?
We had about 4 dozen vendors, including close to 20 farmers and then many up-and-coming businesses that produce
honey,
kombucha and honey kombucha. And locally roasted coffee. And Lucy's Market was there with a whole range of Alaska-grown, made-in-Alaska food products and food trucks that buy local from farmers.
And we need to talk about the food trucks and other restaurants as well. But we are up to the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a couple-minute break here. This is the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman. Please stay tuned. We have lots of... Oh, I told myself I wasn't going to do puns, but we have lots more local food to dig into. So please stay tuned.
Thank you.
And we are back. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.na. I'm Jenny Nyman. You are tuned into the Kenai Conversation, where we are talking local food this week. Yes, it is February, I know, but there's still local food to eat, and there's local food to plan to eat as well. So our guests today are Eliza Eller with Ionia and one of the founding members of the Kenai Local Food Connection. Got Heidi Che, District Manager of Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District, and Abby Alla is owner of Ridgeway Farms off of Strawberry Road, kind of right in between Kenai and Soldotna. Before the break, we were talking about all the various ways that folks who want to eat local food can do so. The farmers markets, the food hub, which is the online farmers markets, you can subscribe to a CSA program. You can also just go eat at a restaurant and eat local food, maybe without even realizing that you're eating local food. So whoever wants to take this one, how does that restaurant partnership, how has that evolved and how does that work locally?
Well, we've seen steady increases over the last several years in farmers making the direct connection with local restaurants. I think local restaurants would like to purchase as much local food as they can. The several that I'm thinking of, the Flats Schnitzelbomber on K Beach Road, Odie's in Soldotna, Addy Camp in Soldotna are ones that come to mind that have been very supportive of local farms. And it's challenging for the restaurants because they are used to getting large volumes of very consistent product. And the strategy that seems to have been working, maybe Abby can talk about, Megan at Odie's, set the goal a couple of years ago. I'm going to introduce one new product each year and really rely on local suppliers for that.
She didn't really, she might have started that way. But the first year I was dealing with Megan, she came to the farm, looked at the farm, went all over it. By the end of the year, she had her favorite variety of lettuce, and she would ask for it by name. I was very proud of her. And but she was doing a lot more than lettuce. She was going clear across the spectrum. She was probably doing 15 different types of vegetables at least. And then they have other farmers that they go for other things. They have their special farmer that they go to the carrot farmer for and the potato farmer for. And it makes me, and they, you know, I raise cucumbers, but there's another farmer who raises cucumbers. And so they split their cucumbers between our cucumbers and the other farmer's cucumbers. And it's good because we really, really, really need to support people who grow locally. And it doesn't matter if they're the little local person next door that has a few heads of cabbage left over, buy them. Don't expect them to give them to you. Buy them from them so they can buy more seeds next year. And I almost tear up when I think of Odie's and all the, I mean, they have been taking enough vegetables to equal 8 subscriptions. So that is wonderful.
And that's got to be so helpful for a farm to be able to plan ahead. And if you have, I don't know whether they're written contracts or just discussions that, okay, this restaurant for this coming summer, they know that they're going to want a lot of radishes or they're going to want a lot of tomatoes or they're going to want a lot of this specific kind of lettuce. And to have that conversation with the growers, because you can't really just change in the middle of the year. Those decisions about what you plant and when they're going to be ready, that needs to happen this time of year. So to be able to work that out in conjunction with a restaurant early.
Right. We start growing our ordering our seeds in December. And this year we're having a problem with one of our greenhouse furnaces. But usually we have cucumbers, peppers, and tomatoes already growing. So,
and those decisions by those restaurant owners, it shows up in their food. It shows up in their business. I don't know if anybody's been to Odie's lately, but their food is really delicious. And part of that is their cooking abilities. Part of that, a big part of that, is where they source their ingredients. And as business owners get to know the advantages of buying more local fresh foods, hopefully they will just keep going more and more because it's good for their business.
Yeah, it's a nice marketing thing that you see more and more as well. They make a big deal out of fresh local produce made with local ingredients, sourced locally, and that brings customers specifically to them. So it's nice to see that whole circle being effective for the restaurant and then being helpful for the farmers and then just being good for the consumers too.
And consumers, please ask, you know, whenever you're eating out, it's a good opportunity to ask what's on the menu that is sourced locally.
Absolutely.
And as most of us know, corporate foods have all kinds of hidden ingredients, preservatives and sugar, which isn't very good for us. So it's really a big investment in our own health, our own family's health, and our community health, so that the healthcare costs can start to come down and our quality of life can go up. You know, I think local food is really about quality of life. It's about fun, it's about health, it's about taste, and all of those things are a huge part of a revival of a local culture that can be nurturing and special.
We've been talking about maybe the more visible ways to find local food. You see the farmers markets, or you might drive by, there's highway frontage farms with signage, like Abby's Ridgeway certainly is very visible. But there are a lot of folks growing and producing and selling who are a little more off the beaten track. So Heidi, there is a resource where you can find everyone really who produces anything in this area, and that thing has taken off over the years as well. So can you tell us about the local food directory?
I'd be happy to tell you about the Kenai Peninsula Loves Local Food Directory. A couple of us started about 10 years ago. 2011 was our first edition, and it was black and white Xerox, and we made piles and piles of those and set them out at Cooperative Extension in the Visitor Center and the library and that sort of thing. Now it's a full-color brochure that's distributed very widely up and down the peninsula with dozens of listings of farms, fishermen, shellfish growers, producers of Made in Alaska, value-added products, jams, jellies, hot sauces, that sort of thing, wine.
Pickles,
coffee, And this is the go-to resource for somebody who's new in the community, somebody who's been here a long while and wants a handy resource that lists all the farmers markets, where they are up and down the peninsula, hours each year, each week, and other handy information.
It's quite handy. It's very convenient. I even use it still. To just kind of get to know, wait, I really want some cucumbers and I want them now. You know, who's got them out there?
Or you've got visitors visiting and you need an activity for the whole family, and going to a U-Pick berry farm might be a fun thing to do. So you will find, where are all the U-Pick berry farms and how do you get in touch with them and what are their hours?
Or maybe you're in the mood for a wine tasting.
Mm-hmm. You would find that. Or if you're looking for a CSA subscription, Abby's got the biggest one, but there are several other folks on the peninsula who are offering CSA options.
You want to bulk up your herbal supply. Who's got the parsley? Who's got the cilantro? Yeah. It's a really great resource.
It is. And if people are local producers, has the deadline passed to be involved in to be listed in the 2020 edition, or are you still taking names?
We're taking names until March 1st, and all the information and the link to the registration form and payment information is at kenaisoilandwater.org, and you can always find the latest published version of the whole directory at kenailocalfood.org on the landing page there.
Excellent. So Abby, as someone who has been doing this for a while, how have you found it most effective to let people know who you are and where you are? I mean, you've got highway signage, which is pretty handy. Not everybody has that option, but do you find that people come to you through the local food directory or through social media, or is it word of mouth? What tips might you have for other people who are starting out and wanting to get noticed and get their name out there?
You know, I don't have the answer to that. It's frustrating to me because there's a lot of people living here that don't actually even know we exist. And I would like to be able to find a way to get them to know that we exist. And so I don't have the good answer. I rely on Joe Rizzo.
You've got a good graphic designer that makes some beautiful posters, and I yeah. see them here and there, but you're probably not the one who has to put them up there.
No. I'm just down in the garden, you know.
Abby attracts a lot of volunteers, and she's attracted some great social media volunteers mm-hmm. who help put the word out.
Yeah, it definitely takes a much wider skill set these days than maybe it did 20, 30 years ago. I mean, it, you know, you used to be good at farming, and you were good at farming, and that was what you needed to do to have a successful farm. But man, anymore, you got to be a yeah. social media mogul and a business expert and a chemical engineer and a on and on and on.
Speaking of which, the Kenai Local Food Connection is hosting our first Farmers Day, Spring Farmers Day, February 29th. And I just want to mention it because it's an exclusive event for farmers and prospective farmers who want to expand their resources and learn all and gather. It's basically a resource fair for all the possible services and supplies that a farmer would need and every year. So there's going to be granters there and bee ordering and compost suppliers and local seeds and insurance and farm intern resources and bookkeepers and social media experts and fencing folks and everything that, you know, equipment rentals, everything that a farmer might need all in one space in one time out at Ionia on February 29th. And it will wrap up with dinner and a barn dance, so with live callers. So we're really excited to be able to support our local farms in this way.
So that is a wonderful segue because we have a list of things coming up to mention. So listeners, grab your pencils because you are going to want to know about these. So that is on the 29th.
February 29th.
Okay.
You can find details at kenailocalfood.org. Or contact any of the Heidi or I, the Kenai Local Food Connection folks, to find out more.
Kenai Local Food Facebook page as well has the flyer up.
Yep, and they post all kinds of interesting, useful things, so mm-hmm. definitely be on there. So Heidi, there's something coming up tomorrow as well.
Oh, tomorrow. Tomorrow at Kenai Peninsula College at 6 o'clock. Kenai Local Food Connection, KPC, Kenai Soil and Water, and Peninsula Regroup are co-sponsoring a screening of the film Wasted, the story of food waste. So we haven't talked about that topic, but there are a lot of community initiatives going on to reduce food waste and make sure that what food waste there is gets put to good use. So that will be a screening and followed by a panel discussion tomorrow evening.
And it's free.
Free.
And then on February 21st, and this is a recurring one, there's Farm and Food Friday.
Right, at Odie's, which is kind of the central location for talking about farm and food. So we started 2 years ago, we being Kenai Soil and Water and Kenai Local Food Connection, hosting these monthly coffee talks, except during the busy growing season. So basically October to May. We have a monthly coffee gathering. Sometimes there's a guest in town to offer to talk on a particular topic. Sometimes we've just had somebody return from one of these statewide conferences that only a handful of folks from the peninsula make it. So we have somebody come back from the Farm Bureau Conference or the Sustainable Agriculture Conference and share highlights of what's going on elsewhere in the state. And other times we just talk about topics of mutual interest. So again, it's farmers, prospective farmers, food entrepreneurs who want to make connections with the farm community. It's what we're doing there is building a culture of collaboration and information sharing and mutual support.
Okay, so that one, anybody with a farm local food interest can go and
welcome.
Connect that's, with others.
That's at Odie's. It's the third Friday of the month, 8:30 to 9:30 in the morning.
Okay. February 25th, the Irrigation Water Management Workshop.
Mm-hmm. Natural resources.
Sounds like a barn burner.
I know. Well, you'll be able to put it out. It's irrigated, so
listen,
it's fine.
We haven't talked about the drought last summer. And
That's a
big concern for a lot of farmers is having functional irrigation at an affordable cost. So Natural Resources Conservation Service is putting on a workshop on the 25th. It's an evening workshop. I believe it's 5 to 7 p.m. That'll be at the NRCS office in Kenai.
And I just want to say something about that. Here in Alaska, we're spoiled about water. We think that we have endless supplies. And the drought last year really showed us that this is not true. A few communities around Alaska did run out of their reservoir water. And as growers, this is something that we're going to take increasingly seriously to be able to make sure that we have a good supply that is used wisely so that we can grow our food abundantly.
And that's what good irrigation water management is about, is using water wisely. It's costly to pump water. We don't have to pay for water, but you want to use it wisely to make it last. So that's what that event is about.
And that's probably not something you want to wait until there's a problem to plan for. That's something you want to put some thought into ahead of time.
Beforehand. Mm-hmm.
February 20th to the 21st is the Alaska Sustainable Agriculture Conference.
That'll be in Anchorage. It is the production of University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension. It brings growers and agricultural professionals together from all across the state. And if you look up Alaska Sustainable Agriculture Conference, you will find you'll get to the conference website. And it's an affordable conference for growers. I've been told register at the student rate if you have a problem with the full 3-day rate. So that'll be coming up in Anchorage at the BP Center starting February 20th. Now is a good time to register.
Okay.
And I just want to say, you know, in Alaska, we are lucky to have really pristine volcanic soils that have not been over-industrialized and overused, and which still have an incredible natural fertility. And with some common sense practices, composting and putting back into the soil and conserving our water, we can continue to grow very delicious and nutritious food here. We're super lucky. So that whole myth that somehow all our food has to come from the breadbasket of California or the Midwest is really, it is a myth, because actually our soil here is some of the best.
And it's been fun to see people plan for that as well. So like you've got a high tunnel and then in the winter, maybe you keep your chickens in there or your pigs in there. And hey, not only do you have housing for your critters, but you have fertilizer now as well. So I think people are, and they're, oh my gosh, there's a term for it, but the natural charcoal, like you...
Biochar.
So you can clear your land and, you know, burn off the overburden, whatever it is, use some of that.
There's quite a bit of biochar in the burned woods around us, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah, lots of creative solutions out there.
Lots of experimentation going on with that. Eagle Glade Farm here in Nikiski has been experimenting with getting the snow melted earlier by sprinkling biochar because it's black. It gathers the sunlight, melts the snow faster.
That works great.
For earlier emergence of winter planted crops like garlic.
I was just thinking when you were talking about what you put in your greenhouses, the hoop houses in the winter, is we've housed injured horses.
Oh.
You know. So, I mean, and we have our hoop houses designed where that we have a lot of them that have roofing on the side up 2.5 feet. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to put other animals in there in the winter for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Multi-purpose buildings.
Yeah, I like that.
I will caution anybody who's putting lots of animals in their high tunnels. If they're new to it, you really do need to keep up with your soil testing because animals will completely change the soil profile and the concentration of nutrients, and you have to be cautious about salt buildup and that sort of thing.
So as you are starting out in these realms, attending some of these conferences or going to the Farm and Food Fridays and making those connections is a great way to make sure you're doing things correctly. And other people have learned lessons the hard way. So maybe ask around and not have to learn them all yourself. So February 22nd, Alaska Botanical Gardens Conference, which of course makes me think peonies, right?
Well, you would think that. Botanical gardens, it sounds floral, but that's not true. It's a much broader conference.
Oh, okay.
Again, the programs at the Botanical Garden Conference are very diverse. There's information for people who want to grow food and flowers and decorative materials, and if you haven't been to the Botanical Gardens in Anchorage, they also grow food flowers, and it's a beautiful place. So they do put on a very good conference. That's
didn't they have a, I think they had a one of their speakers a few years ago was Elliot Coleman, who's a very famous winter gardener, and
that's
he came up
correct.
And did a keynote. So they always have really great speakers.
So one could go to Anchorage and go to the Sustainable Ag Conference on Thursday, Friday, and the Botanical Gardens Conference on Saturday.
Speaking of speakers, just made me think of the local gardening club is quite active in the winter as well. And on, is it the first Tuesday of
the
month?
It's the second Tuesday of the month.
Casey
Matney will be the speaker in February, which is next Tuesday. In April, we have Ellen Vandevies coming from the Valley. She'll be talking about compost, everything that you need to know about garden compost and what can go wrong and how to fix it.
And if you come to our Wasted film tomorrow evening, we'll have some talk about compost as well. So that can start the conversation off, and then you can finish it in March with Ellen.
Right. There'll also be information tomorrow night about the growing connections between farms and the food bank and folks, restaurants and households, you know, how you can get your food waste into the food system without putting it in your own home compost.
Right. And so we're just about out of time, but I wanted to mention one more, since it's in that vein, on farm food safety course that the Alaska DEC is going to be offering.
Oh, we don't have a date for that yet, but
okay.
Tune in to the Facebook pages for Kenai Soil and Water and Kenai Local Food, and we'll make sure that that information gets out there when it's scheduled.
Okay. So whether
that's a good conference. I've gone to it twice.
All right. Recommended, everybody. So if you did not scribble down all of those dates and times, you can get on any of the Facebook pages or Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District. Definitely connect with Kenai Local Food Connection. And that, man, there's just a lot going on this time of year. And it's only going to get busier as growing season begins as well. So we are going to wrap it up. I'm Jenny Nyman. This is the Kenai Conversation on KDLL. Eliza Eller with Ionia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Do you have any last thoughts or anything you want to share?
I just want to say, you know, there's 700,000 people and growing in Alaska, and we all share a desire for our children to grow up happy and healthy and productively. And a growing number of us are taking the actions about that around local food and starting to nurture our culture and move our culture along so that we all can share in this amazing abundance.
Excellent. And Heidi Che, Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District, thanks for being here. Any final thoughts or anything you want to mention?
I think Eliza said a lot there. I would like people to know that there are volunteer opportunities if you'd like to get involved, particularly with Kenai Local Food and putting on this wonderful festival next fall.
Come help us out.
And Abby Alla with Ridgeway Farms, thanks for being here. Any last thoughts that you want to... All right. Shop local. Shop local and eat local, I think, is a good one. All right. Well, thank you all so much. We're going to return to our regular programming. This is KDLL, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.